And welcome to TLF Gems, a podcast about customer experience and insight from TLF Research. I'm Stephen Hampshire.
And I'm Greg Roche.
And in this episode, we're going to be talking about one of your webinars, Greg.
That's right, yeah, with the really snappy title of B2B Onboarding, Acquisition and Exiting Customer Surveys. And thought it was really interesting to do a webinar specifically aimed on B2B and at some particular touch points on B2B, and very much started off the webinar talking about why B2B customer research is different to B2C. What's your views on that?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's one of those where I remember years and years ago, we used to have two slides in a presentation, like a training course we did, where the first one said B2B research is different and the second one said B2B research is the same, because there are ways in which it's different and ways in which it's the same. So fundamentally, you're always talking about the feelings and the thoughts of a human being, aren't you? So that bit of it is the same. A consumer is more like a person in B2B research than perhaps people often assume. But the nature of the relationships, the sort of commercial relationship that's going on there, is fundamentally different. And that means that the research has to be fundamentally different as well. So, you know, you talked about the decision-making unit. You might say in some B2C context, there is a little bit of a decision-making unit. You know, two people who live together might make a decision together. Even a wider family might make a decision together. Yeah. But fundamentally, it's usually one person making one decision, whereas B2B is lots of people making a, usually, I think it's fair to say, more considered, more rational decision, because it's certainly not true to say it's fully rational, but at some point you probably have to write down your thinking in a matrix and justify why you've made the decision you've made. So it gets, I think, closer to rational, probably, on balance.
Yeah, I think the other thing that always conscious of with B2B clients is it's usually a much smaller customer base. So exactly as you're saying, I mean, yeah, with both sets of research, you're trying to get to actionable outcomes and trying to, you know, understand what's driving customer satisfaction and, you know, how to improve it. But the way you've got to get there is different, because you're dealing with a different, as you say, different relationships, but, you know, a different pot of customers, you know, as well, and different people within that. And each customer is usually worth quite a lot of money, and some, you know, are fundamental to that organization, that, you know, on the old 80-20 rule, you really do want to understand what that 20% of customers are thinking that provide 80% of your revenue.
Yeah, I think, and that's, as a rule, each customer is worth more. I think as well, B2B is a big tent, isn't it? And you do, within the world of B2B, you have this sort of certain sectors and certain companies will have this kind of long tail that really looks much more like B2C, where, you know, perhaps you've got builders merchants around the country, and trade people will nip in to buy some screws or a bit of paint, or, you know, bits and pieces of relatively low value stuff. And although, add all those up, that's worth a lot of money. Each individual one of those people in a van nipping in for some screws is not worth very much. So that does become a much, much closer to a B2C kind of relationship.
Yeah, I think it was that commerciality and the value that was going through my mind in terms of creating the webinar about there are certain moments of truth that you'd really want to understand in your ongoing relationship, which often get sort of passed over. There's obviously sort of either annual or biannual surveys that tend to happen. But it's there's this. I mean, the three, or certainly the two key moments that I wanted to sort of focus on was that onboarding. You just got a customer, and a customer leaving, and getting the maximum research and understanding from those two sort of key moments. And I have to, just in terms of a bit of self praise, which, you know, I do an awful lot of, I did really like the phrase the second half of this phrase I came up with, but, you know, the first chance to make a first impression and the last chance to make a lasting impression, I thought was quite a good way of summing it up of what I was trying to achieve in terms of the webinar.
Yeah, the point about onboarding is really good, I think. And I remember years ago we did a survey with a B2B client that and the client had come up with this phrase, setting up for success. And I think that's like
Yeah,
exactly what we're
I
trying to
did.
do often on onboarding, isn't it? At that first few months of a contract can make a lot of difference 3 years down the line when the contract comes up for renewal.
Well, I absolutely, and particularly with the relationship, and particularly in B2B, because we see A with our own clients, the difference between a new client and an existing client, how much you understand each other and how much you understand how each other works. And we always see it in B2B research as well. When you put out, when you split it by how long have they been your client, you do see a real sort of difference in terms of people, the longevity for many reasons. And it's, it might be a bit like, I love my mum sort of stuff. They've been with you a long time, therefore you're satisfied. But a lot of it is perception does equal reality with an established client, and the idea of an onboarding server is really to try and get all that lined up really quickly so they understand how you work and you understand how they work, and you've moved out of the sales engagement tender arena into the delivery arena, and just making sure that those things are all lined up or aligned.
I think one thing I really liked about this webinar, and I like the concept that you're trying to get across here, is I think it slightly repositions the purpose of research, and this is something I think is really, really important to understand. So it's not about just measuring performance. I think traditional customer satisfaction surveys were about, did we do a good job on your delivery? Are we managing the relationship well? And that's you need that. That's not to diminish the importance of that. But what you also need is insight into how customers are feeling and how they're making decisions. And you need that, as you said, sort of throughout the whole customer life cycle. So, one can argue that on an onboarding stage, you haven't done anything yet in a traditional way to get measured, but that doesn't mean the insight is less important. It means it's more important, if anything, because you probably don't have as much insight into how customers are feeling there.
No, and I think particularly in the commercial world, it might be the delivery of the relationship isn't with the people who actually did the deal on both sides. So I think at that moment, and a big part of what I was trying to get at is we talk doing best what matters most, but absolutely to understand what criteria you are going to be judged against, perhaps informally or the unwritten criteria, not just what was put in the contract or what's being sold, but how are you going to judge this supplier? Because that'd be really useful to know as a supplier.
I mean, that point about the sort of that the tricky handover from sales to kind of business as usual. I find that really fascinating because handovers in the customer experience are always
It's
a tricky
danger,
point.
always danger.
So, traditionally you've got this issue where you've got sales, handover, business as usual. And then because that's tricky, people say, okay, well, we'll have an onboarding team to kind of bridge that gap. And now we've got
There's
two
another
handovers.
handover.
And I'm sort of, I'm joking really, because I do think
No,
that tends to help, in fact. But handovers are just always tricky. And again, what you need is insight, because without understanding how customers are feeling, it's very, very difficult to design those things in a way that's going to be effective.
And you know what? It comes across, not it comes across. It's a good thing for the customer to see you doing it, not just for show reasons, but it's good for the customer to have the opportunity in terms of, yeah, this is what we want, this is what we're trying to get out, this is what we're expecting, this, and whenever we do these surveys, it you can see, and particularly you can see because it tends to be on Teams, that the customer is getting a lot out of it as well, because you're sort of allaying some fears, if fears is the right word, and giving them the opportunity, you're demonstrating that you're being listened to and demonstrating you want to do a good job and all things that are going to make their life better as well.
And that sort of brings me to something that I was going to chat to you about, because I think I'm sure there'll be people listening to this who think, absolutely agree. Obviously, onboarding is important. Obviously, understanding why lapsed customers have left is important. Obviously, understanding, when you've acquired a business, how its customers feel is important. But that's what our account managers are for. That's what our salespeople are for. Why do we need insight to address that rather than just sort of managing it.
Yeah, glad you used the word insight. I mean, an advantage of us doing it would be independent, and we tend to think we're pretty good at asking questions because we do that thousands of times a year. And I don't actually think it needs to be someone independent. If the right questioner and the right people with the right listening skills, those people that you're describing, if they're genuinely doing it to find insight, not to sell, not to business develop. If they are doing it, a good account manager should be doing those sort of things. Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it wasn't really supposed to be a trick question, but I think one thing that is the world is still figuring out actually is how do we get insight to sit alongside, account management? And it's always been a bit of a tricky relationship that I think because, we feel this in our own client survey, don't we? As we as client managers, you naturally become protective of the relationship with your clients. You naturally get a bit nervous about someone else phoning them and asking them loads of questions. And think, well, I know that. I know how my client's feeling. And that instinct is understandable and is even mostly sort of correct. It's just slightly misunderstanding what insight is for. So
Yeah.
insight isn't about replacing that kind of
No, complementing.
person-to-person
Absolutely
account
complementing.
management relationship. It's about complementing it and thinking more sort of structurally as well, so more systematically. So client managers, account managers are always going to be thinking really account by account. You need someone who's thinking across the bigger picture
Yeah.
and going, actually, I think we need an onboarding team. No account manager is ever going to think of that, really, or they might think of it, but it's a more systematic way of thinking about a process to support those individual relationships.
Yeah, and unquestionably as well, good feel. I tend to say, in B2B surveys, three quarters of the people waive their anonymity, happy to put the name against it, haven't said anything to you that, haven't said to the client. But therefore, a quarter choose anonymity, and there's a couple of reasons that people choose anonymity. I did some research with one of my clients. I looked at the anonymous clients, and actually the greatest proportion of them were really satisfied and scored lots of stuff really high. And the conclusion was they chose anonymity because they sort of didn't want to be contacted. I've given you a survey, I've given you my feedback. Best way of just ensuring that's complete and finished and you don't come back and pester me again, is to choose anonymity. But there is the other proportion, and the number of times, and you'll be exactly the same, where I've done Teams depth interviews, and you are getting it's amazing how honest client's customer is with you, is telling you some really good, sorry, gold nuggets. They might not be good, they might be really bad, but they're certainly sharing insight and feelings with you, and do choose anonymity. And you sort of think, wow, this is, and obviously, we'd feed it back to our clients in the right way, anonymous and that sort of stuff. But it's really good stuff that they need to be aware of. We can't tag it to that person, obviously. But having that feedback that actually, I didn't get a visit off my sales rep as they're going through the exiting survey. And the exiting surveys are really interesting because I think everyone thinks, right, customers left, they're unhappy. Where there's probably a couple of things that often people are leaving for, happy customer leaving. They just don't need your product or service before, or they found a better way of getting it, or they're doing it in-house. So getting that whole thing, understanding that is, asking questions, likely to, engage anything the organization could have done. But often I find the exiting one is a mixture of things. It's them making a big decision to perhaps move to a competitor. It doesn't come from a single event, doesn't come from a competitor just offering them a lower price. It does come from a series of events. Yes, they've been courted by a competitor. Do you know what? I haven't seen my account manager or been in contact for ages. In fact, I'm not even sure who it is. now, but particularly as the world's moved to being much more on screen and not visiting in person and all that sort of stuff. And I haven't seen my account manager for ages. Oh, a delivery was late, which really mattered. And there's been there's been something wrong with the invoicing and getting some hassle from accounts. And understanding that picture, even if the customer's if the client's customer chooses to be anonymous, is really good insight for building up why are people leaving, not just because the competitors have offered lower price. That is part of a story.
Yeah, I think as often with customer insight, the real messages often take a little while to come out, and they're often a little bit buried. So I think one of the biggest red flags you can have in a customer a B2B customer interview is when people if you talk to someone about their account manager and they go, oh yeah, he's a really nice guy. And okay, he's rubbish then, because it's like saying you've got nice eyes, isn't it? Like if you're leading with
Thank
he's
you.
a nice guy, there's some other kind of problem to dig into there.
Yeah, it is and often you can even see a disconnect between he's a nice guy and he tries my best for me, but there's a system fault with a systematic
Yeah,
fault with the
absolutely. Yeah,
company,
yeah.
and they aren't blaming Stephen as my account manager. He's wonderfully does everything he could. But it's his organization let him down. And do
Yeah.
you know what? Often that's easy. That's useful again, because like you say, and I think it takes a bit of, it does take a skilled interviewer to dig into that, because do you know what? It might well be that the organization is letting Stephen down. And Stephen might be banging the door in the organization saying, do you know what? You're letting me down. But is it getting traction? Is he getting believed? Is it just Stephen? Or actually, is it all the Stevens in the organization, and on an individual basis, he's not getting traction, but all the Stevens should. The idea of lots of Stevens is frightening me a bit here.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really good example of where insight sits nicely alongside account management. And it isn't a case of going, all the account managers are doing a bad job. It's about thinking about the root causes. So, and very often what we find, and this is where something like journey mapping is really useful, is that, if you map out the customer experience from a customer's point of view, and then maybe go and talk to the account managers and other teams internally, map out the internal side of things. What you very often find is, well, yeah, and no one's supporting account managers to enable them to do that. That's why they're not doing it, because it's not possible for them to do it. So
Perhaps
it's a systematic issue, not an individual issue.
to go slightly full circle on it, I did try and preface the webinar by using those as examples of journey mapping, because they're not even examples. I actually think they're really key customer journeys, and perhaps a lot more key than some of the customer journeys we get asked to map, which tend to be sort of internal process things, which are worth doing unquestionably. But I would suggest, and I'm trying to start an argument, I think, with you a little bit here, that perhaps the onboarding and exiting are, I'm struggling to think of a couple of more significant customer journeys that would be worth mapping. They've got to be key. Got to be key.
I don't disagree. And the other thing with journey mapping, and this is not a podcast about journey mapping, so I won't get into too much detail, but I think sometimes people try to apply it where the metaphor doesn't really fit. And the beauty of onboarding and exiting is the metaphor really does fit. You have that sort of journey from, I've decided I want to join you, or I've decided I need a solution to this problem I've got anyway, or I've decided that, I want to leave because someone else's solution fits my problem better. And those have a clearly defined start and endpoint, and it makes sense in terms of the journey metaphor. Whereas sometimes if we try and shoehorn in, I don't know, making an order and getting a delivery, yeah, it's kind of a journey, but not really. So it becomes a lot more difficult.
It's more processy, isn't it? It tends to be a bit more internal focused. One of the other things that I absolutely, it doesn't surprise me now because it happens all the time, but it surprised me at first, which is just how honest people are in giving feedback, particularly on the exit survey, because there's been a relationship there. there is respect there. And often we would ask in sort of exit surveys, are you leaving for for another service provider? If so, who and why? And they will say, I'm leaving to go to this company, XYZ. They're offering me this product, ABC, at this price, which is 10% cheaper. And what I really like about them is this, this, and this. And they're saying they'll do that, that, and that. And they're offering to do this for us and hold that stock and do this. And you think, wow, that's and they're willing to tail that without a problem because it's sort of a relationship, and it's and you're not going to convince them to stay anymore, and
No.
they're just and it's I think of it, it's nearly like a farewell gift. Here's some really good information that or some good insight that needs to be within your business.
I think I'm I almost cheered at one point in your webinar, you'd be glad to say,
Oh.
but when you said lost customers are not always unhappy people, and that's absolutely true. And we're so all of us, I think, in the world, because you feel a sort of sadness and perhaps even a sense of betrayal or something when a client leaves
Yeah.
you, you tend to go, oh well, they clearly hate us then. And that's just not true. Customers, sometimes they'll leave reluctantly. Sometimes, someone else in the
Yeah.
business makes a decision and they're really sad to leave. But, those decisions have been made for price or whatever other reason.
I'm working with a client at the moment, Stephen, in the IT services sector, who are just changing their offering. And are majoring on one offering they had and moving away from another offering for strategic reasons and all that sort of stuff. And therefore they're just not supporting the services that some of their clients want and and are having that conversation or trying to help them find other and because that's the way their business is evolving, and people don't want them to alter the way that section of customers, but for completely the right commercial strategic reasons, they're going down a different avenue. And there's a really during the interviews that they're like saying, "Oh, I wish they were staying because they've been great," and this sort of stuff. The other bit that I sort of think that just perhaps the final one on the exit interviews, that quick, well, two things. Is there anything that they could have done to retain your business is always a good question because you get a really good answer to it. No, they couldn't because of this. Or, well, if they'd done X, Y, and Z and all this, they could. But I think the other question that I quite like, and I think it sets it up with the, lost doesn't mean gone forever. Are you happy for us to keep in contact with you regularly? Because and I still would like to come to your annual conference, and still send me the product literature, and the door is still open. It's not shut completely. Of course it's not. It's a bit ajar. Whereas I think internally you think lost, right, they're gone. Right, not going to spend any more time on them. We'll target our sales marketing effort or something for new customers. Let's find a replacement. And you sort of think like your lost or your lapsed customers are a fertile, things are going to change again with them, or who they've gone to, it's going to change. It's an ever moving, an ever moving fee. So just establishing that, yeah, of course, just give us a ring every quarter. Be lovely to catch up with you. Lovely to see what's happening in the market. Any new stuff you guys have got, and it's a different sort of relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that point that a lapsed customer can, in a way, lapsed customers should immediately go into your, really hot prospects bucket, shouldn't they? Because we know these people buy what you do. We know that they're a decent fit, or unless it all went completely wrong, but most of them are a good fit. And they know who you are, they know what you do. If you were building the perfect lead, they would be a customer who's just left you, wouldn't they?
So my final question to you, Stephen, why do so few people do onboarding and exit surveys?
I think because they don't, it's the thing I was alluding to before, that they see customer surveys as being about measurement of performance, not about insight to understand customers' needs so you can design a better experience. And I think that's a sort of fundamental shift of perspective of what research and insight is. And once you've done that, I think it becomes natural that you need insight at those points. And I suppose a point that perhaps we've not made kind of forcefully enough is that very often what works best at those points is a more qualitative, you mentioned
Yeah.
Teams interviews kind of approach, where you're really digging into the sort of
The
psychology
why, the
of the
why, the
decision
why.
making.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily about, oh, our NPS score at onboarding is 94. Like that doesn't really help. It's understanding the needs and the expectations and how they're feeling so far.
Yeah, I mean, you're completely right. It is much more qualitative than quantitative. And if people haven't watched the webinar, I go through certain questions you can ask and things like that. So if this has any way resonated with anyone listening, I'd watch the webinar. There's some really good tips. I go through some of the common questions we ask that, at each of those stages. So hopefully you'll find that pretty useful.
So that seems like a good place to wrap up. Thank you very much for listening. If you're using iTunes, please subscribe, rate, and review us. And if you want to get in touch, you can find us on Twitter at TLF Research or at tlfresearch.com.